Hello and welcome to Resource Report, where we share with you important information about local nonprofits and resource organizations that support the community we share, produced by Pathways to Agency. I am your host, Rainmaker. Today's guest is Megan Carlisle of Wild Grief, a nonprofit organization helping people navigate loss of loved ones through hikes and campouts in our beautiful Pacific Northwest parks and wilderness. On today's show, Megan will share how she came to work with Wild Grief, programs offered, and how to get on a hike or become part of the Wild Grief team. We also discuss types of grief, how their bereavement counseling on hikes and campouts work, as well as how they are working to bring greater accessibility to their programs for differently abled individuals. I am here with Megan Carlisle from Wild Grief, a wonderful nonprofit. Hello, Megan. How are you doing today?
I'm good. Yeah. Thanks so much for having me on.
Absolutely. Tell me about yourself. How did you, do you have a background with this kind of thing? Like, where do you come from with this, and how did you get yourself to this place where you're able to be comfortable and confident doing this kind of work?
Yeah, so I have kind of a unique pathway that I got here. I used to teach permaculture and organic farming. I'm actually an Evergreen graduate. So I have a big background in soil science and organic agriculture. And I actually used that to get a job at Recompose, which is the first facility in the world that converts human bodies into compost.
Oh, I've heard about that. Yeah. I think that's amazing.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And so I was the operations manager there and helped open the first facility in the world in Seattle. And I did that for 2 years and was kind of not thriving in urban living, kind of that needing to be outside thing. Turns out to make compost in a warehouse, you end up not being outdoors very much. when I was looking for another job, Wild Grief is one of the few places that kind of grief and nature come together. It's pretty unique nonprofit.
So Wild Grief was already existing before you came along?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I don't know. Somehow I had this impression that this was all you.
No, I'm somewhat late to the game. I've been working there for about 2 years.
Okay.
Monica's been working there about 4 or 5 years, I think.
Okay.
So it was all started by volunteers, and the first programs were, started before they'd ever hired anybody. We've evolved. We try to evolve organically, and moving at the speed of trust is one of our principles. So just not trying to get bigger and bigger and bigger for biggering's sake, just really trying to grow to the rate when we can serve more people, but not lose our soul, as it were.
When you joined Wild Grief, were you trained there, or did you have training in grief work, elsewhere?
Recompose, I think, is a definitely a training in grief support, but probably more acute around, I was working with people who were directly just suffered a loss, but maybe in the last couple of weeks. So it definitely have a Wild Grief had a very different approach that I feel like participating in. Our guide training was only actually a couple of weeks after I started, so that was kind of nice to be able to. I kind of participated like I was training to be a guide, so it got a little bit of the view from that angle when I first started. I learned more all the time. I think I'm refining my approach to all of that, and also just really making sure that all the guides feel supported in the nuance that they can come up with on the trail, because I think grief is something that comes in so many different forms and shapes, and also human beings are complicated, but just trying to make sure that they feel like they're supported and all of that. Always presents new challenges.
Can you tell me about what you do with Wild Grief? What is Wild Grief?
So Wild Grief's a local Olympia nonprofit. We do grief support services for youth and families and people of all ages. And we have kind of a unique approach to grief support. So we do everything that we do is outside. Everything we do is free of charge. And it's all really centered in the healing power of nature and peer support, so that, grief is not kind of a lot of the other things that plague our society, like depression and anxiety. It isn't something that needs to be fixed. It is part of the human experience, and really the best way to heal from grief is to grieve. And so really our job is to create the space for community to come together and see themselves reflected in the people around them. And then doing all of that outside, it feels like nature can really hold our grief, and nature, the process of just being outside and sharing your feelings feels like it can be held better in those spaces. And we have a lot of unique programs. We do a 4-day backpacking trip for teens and young adults in the summer. And then we also do a family camp out for families, which is also pretty unique to grief support, to really hold the parents and kids at the same time. And that program is like 3 days in tent camping, and then we take the kids out during the day and do kind of age-specific grief support while the parents meet, and then they come back together and we do kind of all family activities, as well as just, you know, letting kids play in the woods and be normal and kind of just know that other kids are going through the same thing they're going through. Like, even just play when you know that the other people are normalizing your experience is healing for a lot of children. And then we do an all ages hike habit, is what we call it, which is just a monthly short hike around the region, which really allows for kind of tending to your grief long term, and also there's no like barriers, and you can kind of be grieving at any stage in your process and all that. And then we do day hikes for teens and young families. And then we also partner and do some Spanish language hikes as well.
Wow, that sounds amazing. Very busy stuff too. Nature is so healing and grounding. Yeah, it's just, the energy is just amazing. How did it start?
Yeah, so it started with just a group of local friends in Olympia who were all doing grief support, volunteering grief support programs, kind of in a traditional church basement style, and they tried really hard to get kids outside, just even in the little patch of woods next to the place where they were meeting, and they found that when they got kids outside, they got a lot more they opened up more. They were like more kind of natural than kind of like fluorescent lighting and staring each other in the eyes in a circle, kind of like you think of as a grief support group. And so that was kind of the seed of how it all got started, and they were all really outdoor people as well, and so they really saw that it just worked better. Like, they got more done in one day on a day hike than they got done in 6 months of meeting every week or two, because they really could kind of get more natural.
Wow.
Yeah, and we also find that making, especially with like teenagers, that they don't have to make eye contact when they're kind of standing side by side on the trail, and that has a big amount to do with whether they feel safe to kind of open up.
For sure. Yeah. How long has this been going on? How long have y'all been doing this?
It started in 2015, so this is actually our 10-year anniversary.
Wow! Congratulations! That's fabulous. So who do you provide services for?
We're pretty open, but we really focus on people who are grieving a death of somebody important to them. So I know grief can come in all forms, but mm-hmm. We really try to focus on bereavement. And then we serve all ages, but really predominantly focused on youth and families.
Mm. Mm-hmm. No particular demographic, just like literally anybody that's going through something like this.
Yeah, and you know, we tend, because our services are free, we tend to serve underserved people, and I think we really center equity and try to make sure that we prioritize people who don't have a lot of access to grief support, for, you know, cultural reasons or just, like, reasons. Mm-hmm. But I also feel like it's not like a scholarship program. Like, everything's free means that whether you're wealthy or anywhere in between, you're all kind of there on an even playing field. Like, everybody's there. there's not a question about whether or not mm-hmm. they can afford it. And I think that that helps, you know, some kids go and get a scholarship into a program and then everyone knows they're on the scholarship. It doesn't...
For sure, yeah. For sure. I want to ask so many different questions right now all at one time. let's go with... I want to come back to scholarships, but first, there's different kinds of grief. Like, grief isn't always just when someone's passed away. You know, there's all kinds of grief. It's a letting go of something, and that could be a person, it could be an idea, it could be a thing, a place, a community.
Right.
You know, what? How does that fit in?
Well, so our Hike Habit program is really... We really believe in it because we think that there should be a place where people can be kind of showing up wherever they're at, whether, and there's a lot of like clinical terms for like anticipatory grief, like you're anticipating somebody's mm-hmm. about to die and you're grieving it beforehand, and all of those things are pretty like unique. But in order to really serve people the best we can, we really focus on like grieving a death, because we have to train our volunteers and we have to like create, you know, kind of draw the line somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
So for most of our like overnight programs and stuff like that, we also find that peer connections really work best if people have a shared experience. So if you're there, you know, grieving the state of the world and other people are there grieving their dad, it's, you're not really connecting in the same peer way.
For sure. For sure. Tell me about the programs again.
Well, they're all, you know, we're trying to really create the space for kind of unique entry points. So, like, our day hikes are about 5 or 6 hours, and they're usually for teens or families. And the day hikes, I think, are kind of a low entry. A lot of people who don't spend a lot of time in nature kind of feel maybe more comfortable starting there than going on like a 4-day backpacking trip, for example. Again, I was saying the day hikes kind of have a low barrier of entry that people who aren't really comfortable in nature maybe feel better going on a multi-hour hike rather than a multi-day hike. It's also a really great opportunity for families. For our family hikes, we often have, you know, all sorts of aged kids, and they get to really like spend a bunch of hours strung together in nature and allow for kind of parents to connect and walk side by side. And we try to, you know, we facilitate conversations and exercises throughout the day. But we also kind of try to take a step back and allow for people to connect with each other, because that's part of the peer support. Some of the magic happens when we're not doing anything, when people are just eating lunch and they find the person they start talking to and share their experience. I think sharing it has a lot to do with the ability to heal, is just feel like you're not alone in your experience. Like for our family camps, we provide all of the food and all of the gear for free as well, and that I think really supports the families getting to really drop into the space. And also a lot of them just report, you know, they haven't had a break probably since the death, or since, you know, like life doesn't stop, especially when you're a parent. And so getting all of the meals provided, having all of this, you know, we set up the tents before they get there so that it's really just like show up and be held in that space. And that I think is unique, and also really like providing the space for people to be able to grieve and also like learn how other parents are parenting grieving children. Because I like to say, you kind of, when you're grieving as a parent, you're kind of grieving twice. You're grieving your own loss and also the loss that they're feeling at the same time.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Tell me about the teen backpacking trips again.
Yeah, so we find that, you can get a lot of work done in 4 days, because, you know, you might be at a grief support group for an hour or two, but now if we're here for 4 days straight, you really can kind of tie all the threads together. We have a theme of we don't do the kind of five stages of grief, we do the four tasks of mourning by Warden, and it's a
what is that?
So it's accept the loss, feel the feelings, make plans and adapt, and change the relationship with the person who died.
I haven't heard of that. We kind of
like it because it's action oriented. You know, it's like there's something to do in all of it, and so we create our programming. The 4 days of the trip are kind of centered around those four tasks, and so we do different activities throughout the day that are kind of centered around those different themes. And I really like the, you know, changing the relationship with the person who died, because they're kind of always with you, but they're with you in a new way. And so how do you, like, kind of, to go back into the real world, you have to kind of re-enter with, like, how have I changed my relationship with them?
I really get that. Like, after most of my family passed away, I found that I had a better relationship with them. Yeah, a lot of reflecting there. So that's very healing. Mm-hmm. I like that approach. It's active and moving forward rather than the regular five stages of grief that we're familiar with. You have to, you know, denial, shock, mm-hmm. denial.
Yeah, so
that's more of a passive. Mm-hmm. Just, it's something happening to you. This is the process you're passively moving through.
Yeah, and it was actually originally created to about the grief of your own death, like somebody who was dying, and they're going to go through different stages. And so it's not as 100% applicable to kind of grieving the loss. And I also think that people... You know, people just need organizing principles to kind of, like, arrange their thoughts, I think, too. You know, it's not that there's a one-size-fits-all, this is how you should grieve. It's, like, really just kind of presenting different frameworks and seeing what sticks.
Mm-hmm.
I think one of my favorite things about our backpacking trips is that, you know, they're free, and almost always people have never been backpacking. And so they have... like this amazing kind of opportunity to do that, and also kind of in that same summer camp sense, you know the people that lead our programs, they're not your teacher, they're not your parent, you're probably not going to see them again, and so there's like this anonymity to the group of people who come together that allows them to be really honest. We also really believe in a lot of kind of like somatic approach to grief, that, you know, when you're processing big feelings, well, when you're hiking up a mountain, your blood's moving, you're able to kind of like keep the energy moving, and like you could share in a circle, and then you walk away from that space and you can kind of like leave it behind, you know?
So it sounds like from just describing in context, it sounds like it's not like one family group necessarily you have, but you have like okay, now we have several different people who have signed up for this. Mm-hmm. How does that work?
Yeah, so we with our backpacking trips, we do a little bit more of an intake process just to make sure that they're kind of emotionally ready for it. We don't accept people into kind of those overnight programs if the death has been within 3 months, because it's a little bit too fresh. It's actually like not considered like best practices to kind of hash all those things out.
Okay.
Had a traumatic experience too soon.
There's a little bit of a time process.
But you know, it could have been several years ago, because I think long-term integration, especially when you're a youth, you know, if your dad died 3 years ago, you're still processing it, you know.
Definitely. Things will just come up randomly. Something will hit you, a trigger, you'll turn on the water in the sink, and you'll look at the kitchen counter, and bam, a memory shows up out of nowhere, and you're just, like, bawling your eyes out all of a sudden.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
And so I think, the grief can take on so many different forms, and it can come in so many different ways, so... we do a little bit of an intake process. We sometimes refer people to a mental health counselor just to make sure that they're kind of psychologically ready, because there's obviously also a lot of compounding factors around all of those things. I think it's a little bit different for the the two main programs we do our intakes for are the family camps and the backpacking trips. And the family camps is really about trying to make sure that they're kind of a right fit with the group, and making sure that they we are prioritizing the first people to, you know, if we have a wait list, that we're prioritizing people who don't have access or that have or marginalized communities. And then with our backpacking trips, it's really trying to like assess, are they wanting to do this on their own versus the parents, which is one of the harder things in all of it, because parents obviously really want their kids to get grief support, but when we're out on the trail, we really want the person to want to be there on their own. And so we've been trying a bunch of different tactics to kind of, like, we'll talk to the parent on the phone in the other room while we talk to the kid on Zoom and try to, like, get them separated to be like, hey, do you really want to be here, or is this something your parents are pressuring me into?
Yeah.
And so that's one of our main kind of challenges, I think, with intakes, is really trying to, on the backpacking trips, is really trying to make sure that they're there consensually and that they want to be there, because if they don't want to be there, then they're not going to want to be there 2 days in either.
And you have a conversation with the families and clarify that intention make sure. Yeah.
And really trying to, you know, make sure they're mentally stable and, like, ready to be kind of pushing their bodies. I think accessibility around, like, what kind of hiking people are physically capable of is a big discussion for us. I'm trying to make sure that as all people can, that are there, can do it, and that also that we're really catering our programs to make sure that it's accessible to as many people as possible. So it's one of the reasons we like going to the beach, because the beach is, you know, flat. and still beautiful and still rugged and, you know, definitely a camping experience, but not kind of maybe accessible to people who can't climb up a mountain.
Yeah.
And then we really like to, you know, we fit people in based on kind of the time of the trip and whether their availability, but if we can, we can try to, like, link people up who had kind of a similar experience. And then we do young adult backpacking trips too, and young adult programs for grief are also pretty unique. And then we find that time frame from people, like kind of 18 to 25, it's such a unique time that people have to go through. They're going through so much transition and so many life decisions and so much life path stuff that they really need their own peer group to hold them. You know, throwing them into kind of an adult-based group when they are facing a really unique moment in their lives, kind of like a foot in both worlds. We love the young adult ones because they kind of lead to themselves. There's never a question of whether their mom pushed them into it.
Sure, definitely. How do the young adult backpacking trips differ from the teen groups?
You know, a lot of the programming is the same, but I think, again, that kind of, I think the conversation goes a little further, more organically, because you're, I think people, the older you get, I think you get a little bit more tools in your tool chest to kind of process your emotions, and so we'll kind of start a conversation, and we don't have to kind of, like, check in along the way or, like, direct the conversation at all. They kind of run with it a little bit further, I think, than...
So the teen group has a little more guidance.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Hike Habits, virtually and in person?
Yeah, so Hike Habit was actually our very first program. It's been going the longest, and we do them around the South Sound area, so Pierce, Thurston, and Mason County for the most part. And they're just about 2 or 3 hours, and we really think about it as, like, grief tending. So you can kind of go multiple, you know, if you have a death in your life, you can kind of go multiple months in a row and allow for you to just make space in your life for kind of ongoing grief support, because it's an ongoing process. There's no, like, destination in grief. It's kind of you're going to be grieving the rest of your life. It just changes how acute it is in any given moment. And then our virtual Hikebit kind of was, as like so many virtual things, was birthed during the pandemic.
Yeah.
So that's a 2-hour thing that starts with a Zoom call. We do kind of peer connection stuff, and then everybody goes outside. And that could be sitting in your front lawn or going for a short walk on your own. And then everybody comes back together and kind of shares their experiences. So we have kind of a prompts that start. We like get together and lead, and then you go outside and kind of able to just like take some time to feel your feelings. And I love it because, first of all, there's no, you know, you can be in a wheelchair, for example, or alter abled and still be able to participate, which is a big, you know, thing that we're always trying to kind of create more parameters around, more accessibility. And then also you can, people can be there anywhere in the world. So we get people out reaching out to us from all over. Do you have a program like this in New York? And we're like, well, we have a virtual program.
Wow. Wow. Do you get international people at all?
Yeah. A little bit. I think also we haven't really found another, there are some kind of people out there that are connecting grief and nature, and but almost everything we found is paid, like a paid retreat, for example. We haven't really found any comparable services out there for free that kind of do that.
Y'all are it.
Grief and nature support. So people are finding us on the internet when they're grieving and trying to see if there's a hike they can go on locally.
Right on. And you briefly mentioned the virtual is helpful for the disability. I was going to ask about that, how you deal with, you know, have accessibility for disabled individuals.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think it's something that we're always talking about internally, because there is obviously challenges about being able to take people out on the trail and to do that in a way that is really mindful of different needs. So we are kind of always striving to come up with new programs that are more accessible and also get people like pretty deep into nature. And so I hope to bring on more programs like that in the future.
Yeah, for sure. I also want to know, like, where do you take people? And you know, that might be something, you know, considering some, like, there are parks that have like blacktop paved trails for like good for wheelchairs.
Yeah.
Where are you taking people?
We've done some of our hike habits in places like that, and we try to indicate on our website whether or not they're accessible. But kind of we have referred people. There's a nonprofit called Disabled Hikers, which is national now, but is actually started in Washington. And we've kind of learned that there's a lot to what the information you need to provide people to know what accessible is. Just because something is paved doesn't mean that you can make it up a big hill, for example.
Right, right.
And so I think we are really trying to capacity build the ability to do more of that in the future, separate from just like telling people that there's paved trails or this is a gravel trail and should be, and that accessibility is a lot more than just making sure that somebody in a wheelchair could do it. It's like how much physically, you know, how far is it? How strenuous is it? How, is there stairs? Is there a lot of stairs? You know, like all of those things. I think the more we can describe the experience before people get there, the more they can kind of self-assess whether or not they can do it.
For sure. It's not always just wheelchairs, you know, there's like walkers, canes, just different levels of locomotion.
Yeah, exactly. And some people can walk on a trail but can't walk on over a log, for example.
Right.
So really trying to I think for us it's about trying to really describe what we're doing and let people kind of self-select, and then also know within ourselves whether or not we have the capacity to really tell people if it's accessible or not.
For sure. So who are your guides?
I love our guides. We're only 2 staff people, and one of the roles I have is helping with the guides. So we have 35 guides right now, and they're all from all walks of life. We do in kind of January, February, we recruit, and we do a training in May. and they're social workers and chaplains and backpackers and moms and every single kind of kind of every single walk of life. And turns out the people who want to spend their time volunteering for grief support programs are pretty awesome human beings. So I think they're just a great collection of people. But we kind of stand at this intersection between outdoor programs and grief support programs, and so there's a pretty interesting diversity of people who kind of show up for that work. Their level of devotion, I mean, they're coming to volunteer 4 days on a backpacking trip, and sometimes they go get first aid certified to do that, and go show up for training programs and all of that, and I think they're just pretty amazing.
Wow, that's a lot of involvement. So what does it take, again, to be a guide?
We do kind of an application process. We can kind of only have the capacity to train X amount of people per year. We kind of decide year by year what our current needs and abilities are. And then, so we do an application and interview process, and then take people on and train them. And then there's a little bit of like an apprenticeship process of, we don't send them out on the trail by themselves, and we kind of get feedback as to help kind of support their first year. And then once they're trained and all of that, then they kind of self-select, sign up for the different programs they want. And then if they don't sign up, I text them.
Tell me about the peer support training.
So, you know, we do a 2-day overnight camping training at Miller Cervania, and there's a lot of ground to cover because, if you know, again, everybody shows up with different kind of understanding. So we have, you know, hike safety and teaching people our different group processes, and then also just some team bonding and covering things like suicide awareness and mandated reporting and the kind of nuts and bolts, and also just the basics of grief support and how to be culturally responsive and culturally sensitive to the vast different experiences people have. And so it's a lot to pack in to 2 days.
Is there a first aid CPR certification?
Yeah, so we always have a wilderness first responder on our backpacking trips and first aid certified people on our overnight programs. And we have a lot of our training is kind of about how close are people to definitive care. So first aid, you know, basic first aid is, you know, needed on a day hike, for example, in the local area at a local park, versus kind of if you're out in the backcountry, we need to make sure that people have a more advanced care for all that.
Tell me about what kind of feedback y'all receive.
Yeah, I think, I really love hearing directly from all of our participants about how transformative it is. I think, you know, that really keeps the fuel going to continue to do all the work. You know, grief can really send people into pretty intense places, and not just in their own emotions, but also in life changes and life transitions of, you know, maybe your mother passed away and she was the main person making money, and maybe now you have to move, or maybe there's so many layers to what happens in death for the people left behind. And I think being able to support those people, there's just a huge amount of relief to get kind of tools in their tool chest on how to process those feelings and also get connections with other people. So the kind of feedback about all that is pretty potent stuff. We've recently started doing really more interviews at the end, because apparently paper surveys are limited as far as what you'll actually like hear from people. And I think especially from the parents, getting to see their children say these things, getting to see their children like connect with other people, allows them to set their own anxiety about what this is doing, you know, how is this affecting them, aside for a moment, and get to process their own feelings.
For sure. So earlier we mentioned scholarships. Can you tell me about that?
Oh, so, you know, I was really saying, you know, everything we do is for free. We'll never charge for anything we do. That's a committed part of it. And I guess I was kind of just mentioning that for a lot of programs who do scholarships, it can still feel inequitable to especially kids about how they show up. They kind of know that they're the only one there that couldn't pay.
Mm.
And so it doesn't actually, I think, enter kids into some programs on a level playing field. And it's part of the reason that even though we know some people could pay, we want everyone to be there for free so that everyone's, like, equal. And also that the last thing you should have to worry about when you're grieving is whether or not you can afford.
For sure.
You know?
Describe, like, how this goes about getting into having a hike. And
So I guess the some of our hikes you just register on our website, so you can just go in and register. And other, we kind of have you fill out a little bit of an application and ask more for our overnight programs. We have ask a little more questions and to make sure that it's the right fit for everybody.
How does one prepare to go on a hike?
Yeah. Well, so for just a day hike, you just pack a lunch. You know, we pack lunches and we tell people to wear sturdy shoes, so it's not a ton you need. But for our for the overnight trips, it's just packing your own clothes and what you need as essentials.
Yeah. If somebody like was just they went hiking all the time and camping out all the time, that was just a thing that this family did, and they had their own gear and they felt comfortable having their own tent and everything because it's like they're used to their tent, would that be cool if they wanted to have their tent?
Yeah, so we have occasionally had people on our backpacking trips that kind of have their own gear, and we do an orientation and we'd ask them all to bring it beforehand just to make sure that they have what they need, you know, like that it's up to like our standard that their tent's going to keep them dry, for example, or keep the sleeping bag's going to keep them warm just to make sure they're safe. But yeah, people can bring their own.
Okay.
Their own boots and stuff like that. We do make sure that they've broken in their boots because that can lead to a lot of blisters.
Right.
Get brand new shoes.
Yeah. And tell me again about locations, where y'all are going.
Yeah.
I feel like I need a little more.
Yeah, fair enough. Our favorite place to go is Goat Rocks Wilderness, which is just about is just south of Rainier National Park. And it's you drive up quite a bit, and it's about 5 miles into a big meadow that's very, like, high alpine, so it's very, like, view of the North Cascades. You're kind of up in the above the tree line and have those kind of big expansive views. We think does a lot for being able to emotionally like have that expansive feeling that nature can give you. We also really like to go to the beach because I think the ocean always feels a little emotionally evocative, and so we go out to near La Push at it's out by La Push on the coast of Washington.
Okay.
And then we've been, we've also gone to the North Fork of the Quinault River in the rainforest on the Olympics for the backpacking trips. And then for our family camp out, we do Lewis and Clark State Park, which is just outside of Chehalis. It's really accessible to the freeway and close in, but the group campsite is really separated from the rest of the campground, so it's really private. And it's this really beautiful old growth cedar grove where the campground is, and there's no electricity, but there is toilets and running water, which I think gives a kind of the easy, it's accessible for us because there's running water and bathrooms, but the it really gives a good camping experience to not have electricity.
Absolutely.
To be around the fire and all that. And then our day hikes and our monthly hikes are kind of all over the South Puget Sound region. We're really kind of focused on the South Sound because Seattle has so many more services for people than a lot of the other surrounding area. And I think we, try to make it so that things are within a reasonable driving distance but still feel wild. I think that the more healthy an ecosystem, kind of the better for us.
Absolutely. The further from the city you get. Speaking of that, do y'all go places that still have Wi-Fi signals or not?
I think it's, you know, cell phone signals vary a little bit, but definitely our backpacking trips don't have cell phones, and the kids don't bring their cell phones.
Okay.
For, like, our family camp has a kind of low signal, and it's really about trying to, like, encourage people to take a break from technology.
Okay.
Trying not to make major rules around all that, too, for kind of our day hikes and stuff like that. People feel, I think, more comfortable.
For sure. And then y'all have, like, capacity to contact, like, emergency services and things like that.
Satellite phones and stuff like that. Those have been a lot of advancements in satellite phones. There's actually a thing called an InReach, which is pairs with a smartphone, and you can text each other, or you can they can text the main through a satellite, which means that we can kind of give them weather updates and connect about what time they're coming back to the van, for example. But it doesn't mean we're chatting on the phone.
Right.
Yeah, but we have a pretty advanced safety plans because you kind of have those worst case scenarios.
Definitely.
Make sure the parents also feel like informed about the safety plan so that they feel comfortable to let us have their
absolutely
several days.
yeah it's like, you know, worst case scenario, you've got ham radio operators out there for you.
Something like that. Yeah.
And what areas in Washington do y'all cover again? What counties?
I would say it's like Pierce and Thurston. I mean, we started in Thurston County, and Pierce and Thurston are kind of like the biggest population centers, but like Mason County up in Shelton, and Lewis County is like kind of Chehalis down there. But really, you know, Western Washington is probably where 95% of our participants come from.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. That's some amazing work. Transportation. What if it's difficult for people to, you know, like, meet up? How do y'all arrange that?
Yeah, so our we try to, like, really think through all of the different ways that things to make things more accessible. So we've offered gas cards to people who can't afford gas to get to our programs, and covering parking passes with Discover passes and stuff like that for some of our hikes. And for our, like, teen hike day hikes, we do we rent vans from InterCity Transit in Olympia, and so we're driving them, and so sometimes we'll do multiple pickup points so that it's closer for people to not have to drive too far to pick somebody up. So we've done kind of like, I was on a hike once where we had a Olympia, Tacoma, and Seattle pickup points. And then it's, you know, we kind of walk that line as far as like public transportation. Usually try to meet at a transit center so that it's, if we are picking people up in a van, we can do that. So trying to, you were saying, like, the further away from the city you get, we try to walk that line about if, for our family day hikes, people drive themselves, and we would maybe offer gas cards if they can get there and are, like, connect carpools and stuff like that. But if, we want it to be reasonable for people to be able to get there and still, when they get there, have it be a wild wilderness experience for them. So.
Absolutely. Like, do you schedule, this is when we have the hikes, and then, you know, oh, now we have enough people to go on that hike? Or is it the other way around?
One of the biggest challenges we have, I think, is that everything in the Northwest is crammed into the summer. And so we have, you know, for example, we put out our 2025 schedule to our guides to sign up, so that they can, if they want to go on a backpacking trip, they can know where their vacation kids are, and as everybody's busy in the summer around here. And so we have to schedule kind of when our trips are in advance, because we have to make sure that they're well supported and that they don't overcross with other things. Mostly we've had trouble more with what's the cutoff to make a wait list, what's a safe sized group to come off, because most of our programs fill up somewhat fast.
You had to figure out a cap.
Yeah, we have to figure out a cap of, like with the families, for example, there's a lot more adults on the trail, so we can expand those to maybe even like 15 or 20 people, because some of those are kids, some of those are parents, like how many people can we manage, whereas I think on a teen day hike, we might only have, 8 to 10 kids, because when you get 20 teenagers out on the trail, it gets a lot to manage.
That's a little crazy, yeah. So how do you get involved, being a volunteer or donating, doing a job?
Wildgrief.org is, it's the main access point for all of those things. Our guides are all volunteers, but we also have volunteers who come and call it a tending team for our backpacking trips and for family camps. So the tending team at family camp does all the cooking and keeping camp organized and helping with our craft table. And then for our backpacking trips, we'll weigh out all of our goldfish crackers and beef jerky and all of that to get all the food prepared for the trip, because backpacking is ounces make pounds. Every little bit counts, so we have a really specific food thing. And then after they come back, we clean up all of the gear and wash everything and all that. And then year-round, we do tabling and outreach and other programs like that with our general volunteers. All of our programs are free, but it's not free to put on, so we're grant and donation funded, so you can donate at wildgrief.org too, and we really appreciate all of the ways that we feel supported to be able to keep providing this for free.
Your website, it says you're hiring. Tell me about that.
I don't know exactly when we're going to air, but we're recording. The applications are due January 15th, but we're hiring an executive director, which is really exciting. It's going to hire my own boss. but currently, there's an ecosystem committee, which is group of the board that kind of operate as an executive director. They're kind of helping steer the ship, and we meet with me and my coworker Monica are the only two staff who are paid, and they volunteer and connect with us and kind of help steer everything together. After 10 years, they're feeling a little tired of continuing, and I think the organization is evolving past something volunteers can really hold in that executive role. We're excited about hiring an executive director. It's going to be kind of interesting. It's a part-time job, which I don't think a lot of executive directors are part-time, but we've gotten a lot of applicants, and I think the applicants are excited for something that's a little bit more flexible and all that.
Wow, that sounds exciting.
Yeah. We all work virtually. We don't have an office. I'm pretty impressed with how we make a lot happen with a little. We have a pretty small budget, and I describe all of these myriad of programs that we put on, and it's, I think, pretty unique for not a lot of nonprofits are very like bureaucratically heavy, and we are just kind of scrambling to do anything a volunteer doesn't want to do, like getting the paperwork signed and booking all the shelters and doing all the background organizational stuff so that the volunteers can really come together to lead the programs.
For sure. Is there anything else that you can think of that you would like to share?
I guess that I think that grief is something that is so universal, but I think we have a story in our culture that we're not very good at grief, that Americans are not very good at grieving, and I think that's kind of our vision, is that we can change that by really creating a community model, and that there's nothing wrong with you. I think probably the universal experience with grief is that people feel like they're doing it wrong. Like, why am I just sitting here watching TV? I should be crying, or if I am crying, I should get it together and, you know, pull it together. And I think that, or I'm mad at them, and I shouldn't be mad because they can't, there's all of these like shoulds with grief, and really it's that everything that you're feeling is normal, and wherever you're at in any given moment is fine. And, that community can really, like, sharing your experience can really help alleviate some of the acute suffering that comes with it.
Yeah. You have some resources listed on your website as well.
Yeah, I would say that probably my favorite resource to send people to is the Aluna Network, with an E, Aluna Network. And they have a search engine on their website that's really... you can say, I'm a caregiver who suffered a loss from suicide, and they'll give you really specific resources. And those resources can both be, like, you know, online resources as well as, like, things in your area. And so if people call and ask us for grief support resources, that's our main... one of my main places to send people. And sometimes if you send them an email and tell them more details about your situation, they'll send you kind of more catered resources. But, you know, we're part of a grief shed. It's like we're just part of an ecosystem of other people, other organizations that help support this too.
So you do work with other groups.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd love to, one of our main funders is the Safe Crossings Foundation, and they fund a lot of the grief support services in the Washington area. One of the other main ones is Bridges in Tacoma, is part of the Mary Bridges Children's Hospital, and they have that's like one of the main bereavement programs people get kind of referred to in this area by social workers and hospitals and stuff like that. I think the thing that I love about working at Wild Grief is that it really transition, like, my job is really diverse. I have wear a lot of different hats, and there's also a little bit of a life cycle, so, like, right now up to the year. So right now I'm kind of refining our website and redoing our applications. It's all say 2025, for example, or, you know, get them refine all of the process, and then we do recruitment and outreach and tabling and recruiting our guides and our trainings. And then during the program season, it's just all hands on deck and getting all of and shopping for food and cleaning camping gear and picking up the van and dropping off the van and, like, all of the kind of logistics of the program. And then in the fall, I do a lot more fundraising and grant writing and running capital campaigns and social media outreach. And then in the winter, we kind of, like, what do we want to do different next year? And kind of organizational dynamics. And
very cyclic.
Yeah. So there's a kind of a, you know, seasonal shifts, which it feels like is very keeping in a nature-based organization. Mm-hmm. And then also I think it teaches me a lot about just how nonprofits work, especially nonprofits who are trying to be a little different. We like to say we're a little bit feral, a little bit not like your average, not like the nonprofit industrial complex. nonprofits have a whole wild world that they have to navigate out there, and we're really trying to maintain being a little bit of a different approach and not just doing things like everybody else does it.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Well, thank you so much, Megan.
Yeah, it's so great to have me. Thanks so much for having me on the show.
Yeah. I really enjoyed hanging out with Megan and learning about Wild Grief. You can visit their website at wildgrief.org. Go outside, go together, go through it. They are also now accepting guide applications through February 21st. That's
it for today's resource report produced by Pathways to Agency. At Pathways to Agency, we are driven by the belief that everyone should have the tools and support to achieve their goals and thrive in their communities. Our mission is to bridge the gaps in understanding, accessibility, and trust by connecting individuals to resources and sharing information and processes that can lead to personal and community growth. Resource Report offers information about existing and emerging nonprofits and resource organizations. Find out more at pathwaystoagency.org. Also, for up to 2 weeks, you can still listen to today's show by going to chaosradio.org and finding the archive in the Programs drop-down in the menu. You can also find our shows archived indefinitely on rss.com. Chaos Radio is not responsible or liable for any views or opinions expressed in the interviews conducted by Resource Report. Till next time, and thanks for listening.